The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 8778-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to another SB Nation NFL show. This is the off-day debrief. I am Rob Stats Guerrera. He is Brandon Lee Gowton from Bleeding Green Nation. What's up, BLG?
Stats, the Eagles won. The 49ers won again. Second week in a row. Both of our teams succeeding, thriving. Some would say the best in the NFL. No arguments about that.
Some would say probably both of us on this show, and maybe that's it. But some probably would say that, yes. Before we get started, we want to remind you that the SB Nation NFL show is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use the code SBNNFL for a special offer when you sign up. That's code SBNNFL only at DraftKings Sportsbook. If you are new to the program, first of all, welcome. Thank you. Rate, review, subscribe. We reset the state of the NFL with the only 100% accurate power rankings, which I 100% have not helped create in any way, shape, form, or fashion since we started doing this show, but I get to be a part of it anyway, and I appreciate that. And we also give you our MVPs and LVPs of the week. Every week we hand out one or two MVPs and LVPs, and at the end of the year we are going to go back and look at them and see who is most responsible for whatever happened to their team, whether it's good and or bad. But let's start with the Monday night game, BLG. Giants, Buccaneers, Bucks get the 30-10 win, and this one pretty much went exactly the way we thought it would go.
Yeah, it's a big bounce back game, you know, for the Bucks, who lost to Taylor Heinicke last week and really bad performance, gave Tom Brady an LVP first performance last week. But I think we all knew that it wasn't really so much a sign of things to come as much as it was just, you know, obviously a bad game. And the Bucks got right at home in Tampa. I didn't think Brady played like his A game necessarily last night, but he didn't really need it. Still played really well, obviously. And Mike Evans, a beast. The Buccaneers defense, I would say opportunistic, you know, making some big plays. And yeah, it was kind of just cut and dry for them.
I don't think people realize how good Mike Evans is. Like, he's never, I don't feel like he gets the credit that he deserves. He's had 1,000 yards every year he's been in the league. He's had double-digit touchdowns now in 4 years of his career. He leads the league in receiving touchdowns with 10 right now. He's an absolute monster, and it's not like he's had Tom Brady there his whole career.
Yeah, he very much has not had Tom Brady there his whole career, and like a lot of bad quarterbacks before him, but yet has made it work. And one of the things that impresses me about Mike Evans' stats, or at least did last night, is it doesn't even look like he's trying sometimes. Like, he's not, like, out there, like running super hard to get open or anything. Like, he's just – I love that play, the touchdown catch he had where – and it was kind of funny because I think Greasy was like, what do you do here? Like, how do you defend this? And Lewis Riddick was trying to be like, well, you kind of have to play him under. Well, then they're like, well, then that makes you open to the corner route. And he's like, yeah, well, I guess that's what you kind of have to settle for, because Mike Evans, as a former basketball player, stats, I really just love to see him just box someone out and get a touchdown. That's like one of my favorite things in football, when NYTO was like one of my favorite players growing up, because sometimes like you can like play him perfectly in theory and coverage and you just can't do anything about it because he's bigger and he's going to jump and get the ball, and you just like, you're like, well, I just have to throw my hands up and have to accept this. So he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And to me, like, I think he's the most important weapon in that offense. I know Godwin is good. And by the way, Steve Levy, can we learn the players' names on the Buccaneers. They're the world champions. There's no Goodwin. Chris Goodwin. Like, there's that's not a player on the Buccaneers' offense. Like, that drives me absolutely nuts. But good on the Bucs. They get the win. They needed it. They're 7-3, 5-0 at home on the year. Let me check really quick as we sneak a peek at the Week 12. I can't believe Week 12, man. Week 12 power rankings, which, by the way, are up on bleedinggreennation.com right now. You can go and check them out, and you should, because there's a ton of good information in there. They're at number 4 in your power rankings. I know we have a long way to go, and the league is crazy, and everything is weird. Right now, scale of 10, your level of confidence that the Buccaneers can just, let's say, get back to the NFC title game.
I'm going to say like an 8, because I don't think it's like a guarantee. There isn't really anything guaranteed in the NFL this season, as we've talked about, in terms of like the best team, the MVP, whatever. But, you know, obviously having Tom Brady kind of gives you a good baseline of a ceiling there. So I don't think by any means like the Bucs being the Giants means like, oh, man, they're unstoppable again. They're back in full force. But I mean, they have one of the best chances in the conference, which is why I have them up there. What about you?
I mean, it certainly wouldn't stun me at all, but it wouldn't stun me if they got bounced in their first playoff game. Like, this year is so insane, but I don't know what to believe. Like, there has not been a single team this year where you can look on their schedule and be like, yep, they don't have a bad loss. Like, everybody has at least one bad loss. The Titans have 3 losses, and they've come to the Texans. 2 of them have come to the Texans and the Jets, for God's sakes. Like, it's just a weird, weird season. So, yeah, they absolutely could, but I don't look at them as vastly better than anybody else in the NFC. All the NFC teams, even though the records are, you know, there's kind of like a clear line of demarcation in the NFC, I kind of put all those teams at relatively the same level.
So if the season ended today, which I just checked and it doesn't, the Bucs would be hosting your Minnesota Vikings with Kirk Cousins stats. Do you feel like Kirk Cousins is pulling off the upset potentially in Tampa if that matchup were to come to fruition?
I wouldn't be stunned. Do I think that it's crazy to think that Mike Zimmer could slow down Tom Brady in the Bucs offense? Yes. And as for Kirk Cousins, we're going to get into Kirk Cousins a little bit later in the show. I could clearly see him winning that game. For the Giants, I mean, what are they doing, BLG? Their offense, I saw Dan Orlovsky tweeted out something on Tuesday morning. There's one play where there are 3 Giant receivers that essentially crash into each other on one play. And it's like, what? I know that Daniel Jones is not good, and he's not, but like, that ain't helping him any. What the hell is going on with the Giants?
Yeah, I think you could argue that if you're looking at like the big 3 for the Giants in terms of quarterback, head coach, GM, that Daniel Jones might be the most salvageable, you know, one of those.
Agreed.
from Daniel Jones, Joe Judge, and Dave Gettleman. I mean, Dave Gettleman should have been fired forever ago. I think Joe Judge should be fired, but won't be, because I don't think the Giants are ready to give up on another head coach so soon, even though things aren't looking so good. I think it's very clear that Jason Garrett could get fired in season. Maybe
he's
by the time
awful.
We're done recording this podcast. There's actually some interesting, I was reading some of the quotes after the game stats, and Joe Judge was asked about Garrett and will he keep Garrett as his offensive coordinator? And his response was, I'm not going to get into that right now. So that was not the strongest vote of confidence there. And it shouldn't be. The Giants offense is pathetic. Now, look, they've obviously had some injury issues with, you know, Saquon being hurt. And obviously, I just don't think that great. Kenny Galladay has been banged up. Sterling Shepard didn't play last night. He's been in and out. They've had a lot of, you know, issues there. And the offensive line is terrible. So there's obviously absolutely personnel issues here. But still, I think maybe you could do a little more than what you're doing. And the Jason Garrett hire never made any sense. Like, why were you so eager to get this guy? Like, what about it was like, we have to have him. And by the way, remember when the Chargers were like reportedly interviewing him this offseason too? Like, what the hell? Like, what are teams doing? I want to read you this stat here. Stats. Daniel Jones has 20 touchdown passes in 24 games with Jason Garrett. Now, he had 24 touchdowns alone in 13 games with Pat Shurmur as a rookie. So, yeah, Jason Garrett definitely part of the problem.
And it's not like we couldn't see this coming. That's the crazy thing. Like, Jason Garrett was, like, not even calling plays in Dallas. Half the time he was calling plays. Half the time he was, like, he's not this wizard guy. And, yeah, like you said, there have been some issues there, but you're not maximizing what you do have there. They had some pieces with some skill players that are interesting. I think Kadarius Toney's pretty good, too. He seems to get hurt every single game that he's in. But, like, they have some interesting pieces. He's just not the guy to bring it all together. I could easily see them firing Jason Garrett and getting better on offense.
The Giants have long needed to reset. And I think, you know, kind of having an eye on the Giants, well, one, because the Eagles play them this week, but also because I just keep an eye on Big Blue View and all the other NFC East sites for the NFC East Mixtape podcast that I do weekly with RJ Ochoa on Bleeding Green Nation and Blogging the Boys. And I think one of the things that frustrates me from, like, from the Giants' perspective, like reading it from the Giants' fan perspective, is it just feels like they always think like they're just like maybe like one piece away. It's like, we just have to change this thing. Like, we just, like, no, like, this organization needs a hard reset. Like, you have to clean the slate. You have to get rid of, I would get rid of everything, even Daniel Jones, even though I think he might be able to be salvaged. But, like, I don't know that, like, even with salvaging, he's still a player that you really want to give, like, a big quarterback contract to. So I would just tear it down and try to start anew completely. Again, new GM, new head coach, new quarterback, and try to build it up that way. Because, like, they've, like, pretended to go through rebuilding, but they've never really actually done it. And they tried to go all in this year. This was, like, an all-in kind of year for them because of Gettleman being on the hot seat. And they handed out big money to Kenny Galladay and Adoree Jackson and everything. And it clearly hasn't worked out. And they're, what, 3-7 now? And they're just pathetic. And it's every year, stats. It's every year. No one takes the Giants seriously. It's been that way for what feels like for so long now. I've kind of jokingly, somewhat, but not maybe fully jokingly, said that this run of ineptitude, like, invalidates their Super Bowls. At the very least, even if that's too much to say, like, it makes it legitimately feel like it's been forever. Like, that the Giants were, like, a worthwhile team. They had that one fluke year in 2016. I think it was Ben McAdoo's first year where they overachieved. But, like, they had, like, a really easy schedule that year. And then they didn't really do anything in the postseason. So, you know, it didn't really amount to much. They had that one good year. But ever since they won their last title, it's all been just, like, garbage.
They have been hideously bad. 2017, 3 wins. 2018, 5 wins. 2019, 4 wins. 2020, 6 wins. And in 2021 right now, like you said, they have 3 wins. They are not this blue blood franchise that they think they are. They're just bad. And I agree. Tear it down, rip it up, start over. It can't get any worse if you're the Giants. So you have absolutely nothing to lose. I totally agree with you. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll get into the only 100% accurate power rankings in the entire NFL podcast kingdom, plus our MVPs and LVPs of the week. Back here on the SB Nation NFL show. And before we get to your power rankings, BLG, I should mention a little bit of a different schedule for the SB Nation NFL show this week. Tomorrow, we are going to have my interview with Gautam Chopra, the director of the ESPN Plus series Man in the Arena. That's the Tom Brady 10-part series on all of his Super Bowl appearances. Really cool show. I've watched the first few episodes. It's actually very good. There's some juicy little nuggets in there that you probably haven't heard before. And the interview with Gautam is pretty good, too. He's worked with Steph Curry, LeBron James, Simone Biles, like the elite of elite players in the sports world. So you definitely want to check that out. And then on Thanksgiving, my worlds are colliding because it's you, me, and RJ Ochoa for a Thanksgiving extravaganza. We are going to take deep dives in all 3 games on Thanksgiving. That will be there for you on Thursday, and then we will do the look ahead with myself and RJ on Friday. So a little bit different schedule for the SB Nation NFL show this week, but you should definitely check it out. I'm a little nervous about the show tomorrow. Like, Thursday show, like, me, you, RJ, how's that going to go? Are you guys going to get along?
Well, we do a podcast every week, Stats, so I think we will find a way to make it work. I think it's our first time all together as a trio since the we did draft grades, I believe, right after the draft for both, I think, the NFC and the AFC. And we had a big conversation, I remember, about Justin Fields, and someone from that conversation got dragged for being skeptical about him, and I would say someone from that conversation was right to be skeptical about him so far, so maybe we can kind of revisit that and have some fun.
It's funny that you mentioned that, because last night I tweeted out watching Daniel Jones stink it up on national TV. Like, sometimes a dude gets picked and we all criticize it and we're totally wrong. When Daniel Jones got picked, he was universally criticized, and we were all 100% right. I just wanted to point that out. Sometimes we can tell when we see these things coming, and that was one instance where maybe we were right. All right, let's get into it. Power rankings, week 12 now. Let me run through the top 10, as I always do. Arizona Cardinals up from number 4 last week. They go 2-1 with a backup quarterback. That generally will help your power ranking number. Tennessee Titans at number 2 after a hideous loss. We're going to talk about that. Packers 3, Bucks 4, Chiefs 5, Rams 6, Cowboys 7, Ravens 8, Patriots 9, and Chargers 10. I want to talk about the Tennessee Titans.
Okay.
That loss was as bad as can be. They were got worked. The Texans put up 19 straight points on them before Tennessee did anything, and they only fall one spot in your rankings. Explain yourself.
Yeah. Well, I saw this coming. In my pace against the spread that I do each week for BleedingGreenNation.com, I took the Texans plus 10. I really liked that bet, and this is what I wrote. So this isn't just hindsight. I will tell you that I said they're coming off a stretch of 5 really difficult games, and they won them all, to their credit, and that's why they were number one previously. But I think this was a classic letdown spot where they have a big game this week coming up against the Patriots, so they might have been looking ahead to that. They're really banged up in this game, which didn't help. I think it's totally, this is a trap game, like a letdown game. I don't think this is necessarily indicative of things to come from them. I will say, whenever your starting quarterback, no matter what, throws 4 interceptions, that's pretty concerning. That raises a level of concern. And I don't think that Tannehill has obviously been amazing this year, so I will hear that part of it. But like, I really don't think that I can crush the Titans for losing this game, because especially, as you just said earlier in the show, a lot of teams have suffered really bad losses this year. And the Titans, for those bad losses that they have, they also have a lot of good wins, and recently coming off a lot of good wins. And they could easily come back next week and beat the Patriots. And if they did, that would be a really impressive win. So if they lose to the Patriots, then I'll start to be concerned, and then I'll buy in more as this being like a concerning loss. But for now, I think they've earned like some benefit of the doubt, a little bit of grace.
I think it's a bad sign when you can look at a schedule and say, oh, you know, this vastly inferior team. Yeah, I think you're going to lose to them. And then they actually go out and do lose to them. Like, that's not a sign that things are OK. That's a sign that maybe things aren't OK. And I don't get that last thing you just said. If they beat the Patriots, that's a really good win. But if they lose to the Patriots, then you're really concerned. How can that be?
What do you mean? I think that totally makes sense. If they beat the Patriots, a really good win, because the Patriots are rolling. If they lose, then I think, okay, maybe there was something to them losing to the Texans, and it wasn't just a one-off game.
I don't know. If they lose to the Patriots, it's far less worrisome than the loss to the friggin' Houston Texans. They're like an expansion team.
Well, no, I get that. I'm not, if we're comparing the losses, yeah, that would obviously be less worse, but I'm saying the mounting of, you know, pressure of the losses would be bad to me.
The image of Mike Vrabel in the rain from Sunday's game, I don't know if you saw it. It's like a perfect gif. Like, he just has this sad, depressed look on it. It looks like he just got dumped, basically, and he's just standing there in the rain, like, looking sad. It was a perfect summation of the day for the Tennessee Titans. The Green Bay Packers, they are at number 3 in your rankings, down from number 2. Is it at all concerning to you, because you write in the power rankings that Aaron Rodgers is back in full force, and he played great, but they still lost.
Okay.
Does that concern you at all?
Not really. I think it's more important that I think if you're the Packers, I think you would rather lose this way than potentially like Rodgers looking like crap and the defense playing well. I think that's a better way to lose, because I think the Packers are ultimately going to be carried, obviously, by where Aaron Rodgers takes them and not their defense. So, you know, it's disappointing that it looked like their defense was kind of coming along and playing better and, you know, showing improvement, and that was going to be for real. And then they allow 34 points and they allow Justin Jefferson to absolutely kill them. So not great, but I don't think it's like, you know, a devastating loss. The game was what, in Minnesota? It's a division game. It's a game that the Vikings really need as they're trying to bounce back and get a wild card spot. It's only by 3 points. I'm just not ready to crush the Packers for that, especially because Rodgers played well.
The only concerning thing for me is the Packers, to me, have no shot to do anything of significance this year unless Aaron Rodgers balls out. And he was great in the game. The Packers scored on every second half possession they had. They scored touchdowns on every second half possession. The fact that he could play that well and they could still lose, to me, as a Packers fan, I think you have to be at least a little concerned about that.
I mean, a little bit, but again, you look at the history of this matchup, and by the way, I also took the Vikings plus 1.5, so really just nailing my picks here. The Vikings now are 7-4-1 against the Packers since 2016. That record might surprise you, considering like you're going up against Aaron Rodgers a lot of that time, but again, it's a division game. Sometimes you just find ways to beat those teams that you know, that you have that familiarity with, so not going to kill them for it.
All right, who was the toughest team to place in your power rankings this week?
Well, I think the one team that I kept dropping, so little, you know, peek behind the curtain here is like, you know, I have my own little method. I can't reveal it completely, you know, because then everyone else would get the 100%. But one of the things I do is I kind of, I go through, I look at last week's obviously, and I kind of adjust on a scale from there. And I kept dropping the Bills. I was like, okay, I'm going to drop them to this point. And then I was like, oh, but wait, then I have to move some other teams up. So I'm going to keep just dropping them. And ultimately, I ended up dropping them out of the top 10 entirely, as you might have noticed. And I put them 12th, from number 3 to number 12, a 9-spot drop. And like, what's the deal here? Because like, you're supposed to be the team in the AFC East now. You're supposed to be potentially contending for the number 1 seed. Mm-hmm. You have that big statement game in Kansas City earlier this year. Then you lose to the Jags. Okay. It looks like maybe it's a one-off, one of those one-off games that these good teams are having against bad teams because they go out and they blow out the Jets. It's like, all right, the Bills are back. They're back on track. And then they get destroyed by the Colts, who don't have a very good quarterback right now. Obviously have a very good running back, but Buffalo had one of the best run defenses. I believe they were like 3rd in opponent yards per rushing attempt stats heading into this game. And Josh Allen isn't pulling his weight recently. You know, we all talked about how, all right, he's probably going to take a step back to some extent, but he's still going to be good. Well, recently he hasn't been good. He has 4 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, and 1 fumble lost in the Bills' last 3 games. If the season ended today, stats, the Bills will be the 7th seed. Think about that, like the 7th seed. Like they're in jeopardy of not even making the playoffs, which would be crazy after going to the championship game last year.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from them every single week. The variance in their performance is what's concerning for me, because that was like what was so great about last year. If you were a Bills fan, you're like, all right, Josh Allen's coming out and we are just going to work people. We're going to be zinging this thing all over the field and good luck trying to stop it. And they tore everybody up last year. It has not been the case that this year. The fact that they could, again, not just lose to the Jags, but you lose without even scoring a touchdown, you know, like, when you have a quarterback that's as good as Josh Allen, that's not supposed to happen to you in any game. And they don't look right. And I don't know what it is. I to be honest with you, I'm surprised that they haven't done more with Emmanuel Sanders. I thought that was a really good addition when they added him. And he just, I don't know, it just doesn't seem to all be clicking there. And I'm not sure what the reason is. But I agree with you with where you have Buffalo, to be honest with you. Like, I think it's fair. You know, they're not a bad team by any stretch, but I don't think you can put them in the top 10. So, you know, there's a reason these are the only 100% accurate power rankings. So that's a good spot for Buffalo at 12.
What do you disagree with most, stats? Is there a ranking in there that you see that you... So you already kind of disagreed with the Tennessee one. Is there another one that bothers you? And if not, I do want to get into our teams because I feel like people might want to hear us talk about them.
Yeah, well, let's get into our teams because I think maybe maybe there'll be some disagreement. They're actually right next to each other. You have the 49ers at 17 and the Eagles at 18. Let's get into your Eagles first because I want to say it was Ryan Clark of ESPN that said, book it, it's over, the decision is made. Jalen Hurts has proven that he should be the Eagles guy at quarterback. I mean, 3 rushing touchdowns last week. The Eagles, much like the 49ers, the Eagles are just steamrolling people. They are running. They have run for, I believe, at least 175 yards in their last 4 games, and I think they've gone over 200 yards in 3 of those 4 games. They are just murdering people right now.
Yeah, the Eagles' offensive line is, like, going into the season for a while now, it's always been considered one of the best in the NFL, and I think they're going out there and proving that on a weekly basis. Jalen Hurts is getting a ton of time to throw, not trying to take credit away from him. He actually had the slowest time to throw in week 11 at like 3.6. I think Heineke was next at like 2 point something. Like Jalen Hurts is way at the bottom there because he had time to throw because the offensive line is buying him time. They're obviously opening holes for the run game too. I think Jalen Hurts' ability to have influence in the run game is huge for this team because the defense has to obviously account for him as well. And I'm sure you may have seen his ankle breaking juke on Carl Granderson stats, where you know, that game got a little, like, a little, things were a little easy in the link where I was at on Sunday, and fans were starting to boo after the Eagles had a couple three and outs and the Saints were kind of climbing back into the game a little bit. It was never, like, you know, a serious threat that the Saints were, like, really going to take control, but they're making it a little bit uncomfortable there, and Jalen Hurts really stepped up at the end and sealed the deal with that touchdown run of his. So I think it's really too premature still to say Jalen Hurts is, like, the guy. Stop looking for an upgrade, because, like, I still don't know. It's weird. It's a weird spot to be in, because the Eagles offense is having a lot of success right now. At the same time, I still, like, wonder how sustainable it is over a long period of time. I think it's sustainable for this season because they're playing really bad quarterbacks. And to their credit, like, I thought, you know, some of this might just be they're playing bad run defenses. No, that's not the case. Saints stats had the number one run defense in the NFL. They're only allowing, like, 73 yards per game. I think the Eagles had something like 75 yards in the first quarter on Sunday. Like, they dominated that team. After the game, Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni both talked about how, you know, earlier in the season, the Eagles were getting all these questions like, what is your identity? And they didn't have one. They were kind of, it was like, what is this team trying to do? And it's become very clear now. It's very much crystallized that they're, like, this physical, the word they've used is nasty. They're just, like, this physical, nasty team that's just going to, like, grind you down and run the ball. And Jonathan Gannon on defense is incorporating more blitzing. So they made adjustments. The coaching staff has made adjustments. The talent is stepping up. Again, I think you cannot understate how they've been playing some easier quarterbacks. Like, you're talking about Trevor Siemian this week and Teddy Bridgewater last week. So that certainly is helping here. And then they get, like, look at the quarterbacks that get down the stretch. They have the easiest remaining schedule in the NFL. So I think the Eagles are going to the playoffs. I don't know what that necessarily means.
What?
I mean, they are. Look at their schedule. They get Taylor Heinicke twice, Daniel Jones twice, whoever the Jets are starting, and then Dak potentially in week 18, we'll see. But yeah, it's all there for them.
I'm not saying that because I don't believe in the Eagles. I'm saying that because I remember a certain podcast host earlier this season talking about the Eagles, how they're not good, how
they weren't.
You didn't like the things going on with this team, and now you're putting them in the playoffs, you know, 12 weeks later.
Well, that's not to say I feel, like, amazing about where the team is at in the long term. I still have big questions about that. But in this season, they've clearly found a formula that works for them, especially going up against these lesser teams. And for Jonathan Gannon's defense, stats has had a real issues with good quarterbacks. Like, again, they're allowing 30 points per game, over 30 points per game to those kind of guys. And that kind of gives me, like, any kind of, like, really, I question my faith in this defense when they get to the playoffs or they face Dak potentially in week 18. Mm-hmm. And if they're just going to get carved up again, like, that's kind of my expectation. But they've clearly shown that they can take care of, like, the lesser ones. So that's all they're playing the rest of the year. So that's why I have faith in them.
I don't know.
It's not nothing, but it's also not everything, because to kind of compare it to a situation from last year, and I think it's clear the Eagles were better than this team. But, like, this team last year that I'm about to mention finished on a high note, and everyone thought, and myself, as RJ would like to remind everyone, thought, like, okay, they're going to take a step forward this year. And that was the Washington football team. So, you know, these strong endings don't always necessarily carry over to the next season.
I think you do have to give Sirianni and the coaching staff credit, though, because they flipped entirely. Like, the Eagles were going pass early downs, pass, pass, pass. It wasn't working very clearly. And not only have they adjusted, like, they have swung in the complete opposite direction, and it's working and they're sticking with it. To me, that's the sign of a good coaching staff. And I think that, you know, that shouldn't be encouraging to you if you're an Eagles fan.
I agree with that part, and I agree. One of the things I've always talked about, like, the hallmark of a good head coach is response to adversity. And the Eagles were 2-5 after getting basically blown out by the Raiders. And everyone thought, myself included, that they might lose to the Lions in Detroit, and this thing really might just start to unwind, and it didn't. They've come back in a big way. The Eagles have the 10th best point differential right now in the NFL stats. That's pretty wild for a team that started 2-5. And I still don't think, you know, they're like a Super Bowl contender or anything. But again, I think the way things are shaking out for them, barring some kind of like catastrophic injuries, knock on wood, or like, you know, something like insane, Nick Sirianni just stop running the ball all of a sudden. Again, I think they're going to go to the playoffs. I definitely think that's going to happen.
Switching over to my 49ers, kind of a similar story, right? Like, they figured out, hey, let's run the ball. It turns out we're pretty good at it, and it can lead to success. The 49ers have 86 rushing attempts in their last two games. They've won those games by a combined score of 61-20. And it's like, yeah, you know, when I was talking about the Niners in the Super Bowl early in the season, this was the team that I expected to see out on the field. This was the team that I expected to see performing the way that they are, dominating the game. The Niners had a 13-minute and 5-second drive in this game last week. That is the longest drive since 1997, BLG. Of course, it ended with a field goal on a cowardly fourth down call by Kyle Shanahan, but nonetheless, they are just bullying teams all around the league right now, and it's refreshing because, that's, again, that's what I thought we would see.
They're hiding their quarterback, which is not an ideal setup, and kind of makes me wonder about, you know, like what about like the success they're going to have to come moving forward and down the stretch here, because obviously I'm going to be keeping an eye on them because the Eagles and the 49ers are very much competing for a wild card spot. And as we know, the 49ers have a tiebreaker head to head right now from that week two win, as everyone will remember from me singing here on the podcast.
Oh yeah.
So it's a weird spot because what, the 49ers went 1-5 in that 6-game stretch there with the win over the very overrated Justin Fields in Chicago and the Bears. And then since then, they've won their last two games with a very legit quality win over the Rams. And, you know, the Jags are pretty bad. I mean, you know, they were a little less worse recently, but they still stink.
But they killed them. And like, sure, that's what my point on the instant reaction show that I did for Niners Nation is like, yeah, it's the Jags and you can say whatever, they stink, but like, they didn't eke this one out. They dominated. Yeah. And that's what good teams should do against bad teams, like the Buccaneers did to the Giants on Monday Night Football.
Okay, but what's your level of confidence? Because I feel like, you know, sorry, this isn't the look ahead here, but I think it's a really big game this week.
Massive.
Because you look at the NFC playoff picture and the Vikings. I think there's a strong case to be made, even though I don't like Kirk Cousins, that the Vikings are clearly like the top team outside of what I would call the locks in the NFC, which, you know, are the obvious, like, you know, you're talking about Arizona and Green Bay and Dallas and the Rams. Mm-hmm. And who am I missing? The fifth team, whoever I missed there. There's a lock of those five teams, and I think the Vikings are like right there. I think they're the best wild card team. They're not quite in that top five tier, but they're just outside of that. So it's a really big game between the 49ers and the Vikings this week. Like, what's your level of confidence going into this one?
Well, that's pretty much exactly what I have said, is that I think the Niners and the Vikings are the two best out of the scrum in the NFC. I have no confidence that the 49ers defense can stop the Vikings receivers. Justin Jefferson is, like, I don't know if people realize, he has the same number of 100-yard games in his first 2 years as Randy Moss. Like, that's the level that he is at. Even if the 49ers had all their corners, I don't know that they could slow him down. So what I have called this game is, it's got to be the Nick Bosa earn your money game. Nick Bosa has to just wreck things for the Vikings, because Cousins is not a mobile guy, so there's going to be opportunities there. And I don't care if he's double teamed, triple teamed, like, he's the only pass rusher the 49ers have, and that is the only chance they have to slow Minnesota down. I think the Niners can do it. I think the Niners will be able to run the ball well, but you're right, they are hiding their quarterback. It's you can't escape that. The only time Jimmy Garoppolo has been successful this year is when the Niners are running the ball so well that the third downs that he does have to throw are all like 3rd and 4, 3rd and 6. You know, like, yeah, most quarterbacks in 2021 in the NFL with Kyle Shanahan as their head coach should be able to move the chains most of the time. If they're not in those situations, I have zero confidence in him.
Well, it is a big game, so that we know what's going to happen.
Oh,
and that's Kirk Cousins is going to lose.
Okay, well, then that's going to take us into the MVP, LVP points of the week, because I only have one MVP, and it's Kirk Cousins, man. How many times do I have to keep saying it? Like, why doesn't this one count? Okay, let's just take it away. Why doesn't this one count? I mean, look at this situation. The Packers go on a 94-yard touchdown drive. They take the lead. Kirk goes right down the field and sticks it in the end zone to Justin Jefferson. They get the two-point conversion. What happens next? Rodgers comes out and chucks a 75-yard bomb, completely, you know, taking all the momentum and putting it on Green Bay's side. Does Kirk get defeated? Does he get deflated? Discouraged? No. He goes right out there, 2 minutes and 8 seconds, 64 yards in 8 plays, kneels down, and bam, Vikings kick the game-winning field goal in a game they absolutely had to have against a division rival when Aaron Rodgers played out of his mind, and Kirk got it done again. Like, I'm not saying he's the best quarterback in the league. I'm saying he's way better than you think he is, and he should get some credit.
Kirk is having a really good season, unquestionably. The thing with me and about the Kirk Cousins take is, when does the Kirk Cousins stand? Because this happens a lot. I've seen this before. I've seen this happen a lot. Like, Kirk Cousins is actually good, blah, 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 his numbers, everything. When does it ever, like, pay off? At what moment do you, like, see, I was right about Kirk Cousins, and it's manifested in this, like, big way? Like, when has that ever happened? When he beat the Saints in a playoff game? Like, okay, great. And then what? Like, what's this going to amount to, is my point. It's not. It's going to amount to nothing.
So unless he wins a Super Bowl, he can't be good.
No, but like, how about even like get your team to the NFC Championship game, which, okay, he did what against the 49ers, but then got blown out there. Like, how about like, you know, make like a really good run and, you know, have your team in position to actually be threatening to win a title, because he's never done that. And I feel like that needs to be checked at this point. We can't just be like, well, he's really good, he's putting up these numbers. Like, you don't give a player the first fully guaranteed contract for a quarterback in NFL history for him to kind of just be like, put up some good numbers and then amount to nothing in the playoffs, which basically has been the point this far. So you can take your victory lap all you want on Kirk Cousins right now, because I know at the end of the day, like, no one is looking at the Vikings and NFC and be like, oh, I'm scared of Kirk Cousins and the Vikings. No one is scared of them. Like, and there's a reason for that, because they know he's not going to come through at the very end when it matters most.
I mean, they should be. Right now, you said it. He has 21 touchdowns and 2 interceptions on the season. And, like, I don't just keep saying, well, it's not a playoff game, so it doesn't count. You have to get to those playoff games. When you say he beat the Saints in the playoffs, he threw the game-winning touchdown pass in overtime. The game against the Niners wasn't an NFC Championship game, though.
What am I thinking of?
That was the divisional game against the Niners that year.
Oh, the Packers. Sorry. Yeah, they played the Packers that year in the championship game.
But I just, yeah. I want to know. So, like, we have to set it right now. Does he have to get to the NFC Championship game? Is that the line? Does he have to win the Super Bowl? Like, what is it? Because you got to tell me now. You can't keep shifting the goalposts as he goes
along.
I'm
not shifting the goalposts. I'm not saying it's never Super Bowl or bust, because that's not a realistic way to measure players. But how about, like, have a really good playoff performance? At least, like, you could say, like, okay, they lost in whatever, the championship game or whatever, but he had like a really good game. The defense let him down. Like, that's not been the case. It's always been in the biggest moments he has shrunk. It's not like he's been awesome and then the team just let him down. It's like, nope, the Vikings losing at the end of the year, Kirk Cousins is unraveling in a big spot, or back when he was in Washington, same thing happened. Like, that's what's happened. So again, you can stand him all you want. I will not lose any sleep over him ultimately proving me right and failing when it matters most.
Okay, so a good playoff performance is the bar. Somehow the one against the Saints where he threw the game-winning touchdown in overtime doesn't count. Okay, that's where we are. You have two. You have two MVP points this week. Who gets your first?
I don't know how you cannot give it to Jonathan Taylor, who I forget if we gave him one. I don't think we did earlier this year. I considered doing it, and I didn't. It is overdue. Jonathan Taylor might be the MVP stats. As a running back, he might be the MVP. At the very least, he should be Offensive Player of the Year. I think that much is kind of clear here. We'll if see. The Colts, huh? He's leading the NFL in yards from scrimmage. Let me give you some historical context for what Jonathan Taylor just did to the Bills in a huge win in a game the Colts had to have as they're trying to push for a wild card spot in the AFC. Jonathan Taylor, I mean, the fourth player in league history to have the 185 rushing yards that he did and also score 5 touchdowns in a single game. He's the first player to do it since Clinton Portis in 2003, which I feel like I need to stop it down on this and be like, that's a different NFL. When Clinton Portis was in the NFL, that was like, you had to have 2 running backs and you ran the ball a lot more. That's not today's passing NFL. Like, this is like a historical performance. He is the only other 100-yard rusher allowed by that good Buffalo run defense this season. The other one, it was Derrick Henry with 143. I think we're entering a point, and I think I may have said this before, where I think like everyone thinks of Derrick Henry as the best running back in the NFL, and you know, obviously a very strong case for that given the consistency, but I think Jonathan Taylor might be taking him over.
Well, I think Jonathan Taylor just passed Derrick Henry in rushing yards, and Henry hasn't played the last couple of weeks, so let's remember that. But you're right.
Yeah, but yards from scrimmage, buddy. You got to count those. I think he's a bigger threat in the receiving game.
Taylor leads the league in rushing yards, on 100-yard games, 20-yard rushes, 40-yard rushes, yards from scrimmage, touchdowns, rushing first downs, and total first downs. That is an amazing, incredible season. It's part of the reason that Carson Wentz has his fewest numbers of turnovers in a season that he's ever had to this point. Taylor's crushing it. He's absolutely killing it. I want to stand a little bit for Deebo Samuel as a potential offensive player of the year candidate because the dude has been incredible.
Unbiased opinion.
And running the ball. I'm saying he's in the discussion. That's all I'm saying. And we still have seven games to go, but you're right. Taylor absolutely deserves an MVP point. All right, go give me your second MVP.
I just wanted to say about Wentz real quick. Like, Wentz had a 55 completion percentage in this game. He threw for 106 yards in a game where the Colts won 41-15. Like, think about that. Like, he didn't even need to do anything. Talk about hiding a quarterback. Carson Wentz didn't even need to do anything. Jonathan Taylor carried them to victory. 32 carries. Crazy. Moving on to my second one. This is between two. This was tough for me. Both named Justin. Both drafted last year. You mentioned Justin Jefferson earlier. I love Justin Jefferson, as many people know. Meanwhile, Jalen Reagor has negative 3 yards on his last 4 offensive touches.
Oh my God.
Great to see. Love that. Love that for the Eagles. So it's really tough. I wish I had 3, but I don't. I only have 2. And I think I have to give it to Justin Herbert, who he's collected quite a few MVP points in this thing here, even though he's not actually going to be the NFL MVP. But I think the thing with Justin Herbert is it's so clear. Like, his ceiling is so tantalizing. Like, you just, when he's at his very best, he's like this unstoppable force stats. He passed for 382 yards and ran for 90 yards. No quarterback in NFL history has ever hit both of those totals in a single game. That comes from our good friend Shiel Kapadia. Like, that is amazing stuff. The Chargers, if the season were to end today, which again, I checked and it doesn't, they'd be the 6th seed in the AFC playoff picture. So I think they can get there. And I think playoff experience would be really big for Justin Herbert. I don't think the Chargers are about to go on this big run this year, but I think him getting in would be really important for his career. And hopefully they can get rid of their offensive coordinator and maybe get someone better in there. And I just think the upside here is what makes me can't quit Justin Herbert.
You know, just last week on the Look Ahead, I said, you know, maybe it's time to just accept that the Chargers and Justin Herbert are not taking this massive leap forward that we thought. Like, you and I were as high on the Chargers and Herbert as anybody this year. And I said last week, like, you know, maybe I just have to readjust my priors here. And then Justin Herbert goes out and just rips the hell out of the ball against the Steelers. There were throws that he makes where, like, he's throwing into coverage and the ball is just humming so hard, so fast, and so accurately that the defense can't do anything to stop it. There's nothing they can do. You mentioned the rush yards as well. The thing I liked most about that game was when the Steelers are making their massive move and their comeback and they got all this emotion and they score 27 points. Chargers get the ball back. Herbert looks over. Mike Williams is wide ass open. He rips the ball to him. Touchdown. Like, no fear, no panic, nothing. And you're right. Like, I cannot quit the Chargers yet. They just won't let me.
I think Herbert's obviously really good, man. I just think the ceiling, the upside, everything, like, I'm just such a believer in that. Really exciting for him to be back in good graces here in the MVP, LVP points. Who was your first LVP stats?
I'm going to try not to make this too biased, but
uh-oh.
Russell Wilson, man, something stinks in Seattle right now.
Everything stinks in Seattle.
In his last 17 games, which includes a playoff game, he's 8-9. He has minus 2.9 EPA per game in those games. He basically, in that time frame, has been a bad quarterback. Basically, it lines up with the 2019 Broncos quarterbacks, which, if you forgot, were Joe Flacco, Drew Locke, and Brandon Allen. Like, that is terrible. They're averaging like 21 points per game, 17 points per game in less than 4 of his last 5 starts. Like, he's supposed to be an elite top 3, top 5 quarterback, and they can't get out of their own way. And they've got talent around him, too. It's all wrong in Seattle right now. And usually we say it's Russ dragging everybody to victory. And in this case, he's kind of dragging them down, which I never thought I would say.
I think he's clearly not 100%. I think that's hurting. I think the Seahawks stats are really having the season that we thought the Chargers, or not the Chargers, the Packers might have, when we were like, yes, how is this going to work with Aaron Rodgers, you know, not being all in and coming back, and like the vibes seem off. Well, actually, you know, we knew that there was weird stuff going on in Seattle with Russell Wilson at one point wanting out, but that seemed to get smoothed over, at least more so than it did with Rodgers. You know, it wasn't like, hey, is Russell Wilson going to report to the team? You know, there's more question in Green Bay, but it actually turned out to be the Seahawks who, I think there's no shame in this. Like, I understand why Seahawks fans would be upset, obviously, and Russell Wilson struggling and everything, but like, this was a really good era of Seahawks football, like a crazy good,
probably the best ever.
Yeah, and honestly, a lot of teams would trade for what they did. So I don't think there's any reason to be like, you know, they're an embarrassment in this season, but in the longer, like the bigger picture, I think it's just like, not everything can last forever. Like the Patriots, you know, didn't last forever. They had a, you know, down year for their standards, at least last year. Like, I think this is just a natural endpoint to the Pete Carroll era, to the Russell Wilson era. I think it's time to reset. It's unfortunate for the Seahawks, obviously, that they don't have their first round pick this year, and the Jets do, and they're going to get a good one. Mm-hmm. And maybe, which is why you don't trade multiple picks for a safety who doesn't even cover, who's actually like a linebacker. I think it's very clear that the Seahawks need a hard reset. They should. I mean, they're probably not going to fire Schneider, but I think, you know, maybe you keep your GM, but you get, it's time to move on from Pete. It's time to move on from Russ. It's time to turn the page. It's time. We said this last week. I'm not saying anything new here in this regard, but I think it's really crystallized that it's just like, don't try to force this. Don't try to like make it work at this point. It's just over. You just have to like take the L and move on.
And like you mentioned it, you look at since Russell Wilson took over in 2012, the Seahawks' worst year, obviously we don't know how this year is going to turn out, so we'll leave that out. The worst year they've had is 9-7 in 2017. Yep. That's the only year that they did not make the playoffs. This is an incredible era for the Seahawks, by far the best in their history. You know, they went to two straight Super Bowls. Honestly, they should have two straight Super Bowl wins.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that that was the fork in the road. Things kind of crumbled from that point. A lot of guys on that defense just could not get over what happened there and how the Seahawks handled it and how Russ handled it. And they still won games, but it was never quite the same as it was. But I agree. It's over. Get rid of Schneider. I think Schneider's got to go too. It's not like their drafts have been anything special. Turn the page. It was a great era, and you can try and rebuild it again, but acknowledge that it's over. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in a very weird spot if you're the Seahawks. Who's your LVP this week?
They always say it's better to move on, what, a year too soon than a year too late?
Absolutely.
So, there you go, Seahawks. That's some free advice for you, as I know you're listening. So your first LVP was Russell Wilson. I had him down as one of my two potential options for my one, so I'm glad you took him because – I'm not glad because I love Russ, obviously, and I've been getting a lot of crap from one of my friends who knows I like Russ a lot and is sending me the videos of him practicing being in the huddle with no one and how that's not paying off right now. And it's fine. He'll bounce back. I'm not worried about Russ in the long term. I do think he will bounce back in a new spot. So, I mean, he gets to the right spot, but my LVP is Ryan Tannehill. I mean, you throw four interceptions, it's pretty bad. You lose to the Texans. It's a pretty bad loss in a one-week thing. Again, I think this Titan team will rebound. I'm going to take them to beat the Patriots. Again, not the look ahead here, but I'll give my pick anyway. I think they can rebound. I think they will rebound. But in a one-week vacuum, which is what this LVP, MVP activity is about, ultimately, I have to give it to him. I mean, who was like less valuable to their team?
Not only did he throw four interceptions, but as I noted in the Sunday late night wrap-up, he threw three of those picks in the fourth quarter. And that, like, you cannot win a game, obviously, when that happens. The Derrick Henry injury is huge, of course, for them. But that's when you need your quarterback to step up. And a lot of people have been saying, hey, it's not just Derrick Henry there. I was one of them that thought that maybe Ryan Tannehill should have got a little more credit. And he kind of looks like the Ryan Tannehill that we saw in Miami now that Derrick Henry's gone. And I hate to say it, but you got to call it like we see it. And he was my other choice for LVP. You took the words right out of my mouth, BLG. I mean, they're not going to go anywhere if he plays like this. That is hideously. If you play bad enough to lose to the Texans, you better fix something, because you're right. Bill Belichick is coming in there and, you know, licking his chops playing a quarterback that just chucked four picks.
That's what concerns me about their ceiling, ultimately, obviously, is Tannehill. I still think they're going to be good in the regular season. They might still be even able to get the one seed. But once it gets to the playoffs, I think, you know, Tannehill at a certain point, you just wonder if he can kind of get you over the hump. Who's your second MVP?
Well, you stole my Tannehill pick, so I'm going to have to get a little creative here.
You don't have to. You can say him, too, but that's not as fun.
No. Let's give it out. This is going to sound mean, but I think I got to go Dak Prescott.
Wow.
You
look, hey, pause. Everyone pause. I didn't do it. I didn't. The Eagles guy didn't give Dak Prescott the MVP point, even though I've been wanting to do that, but I've held off. Good on you, Stats.
Well, you know, Dak has been really, really good for most of this season. I thought he was the, you know, comeback player of the year. But you're playing a game against the Chiefs. To be an elite quarterback, I think part of that is how you measure up when you are playing against another elite quarterback. Now, Patrick Mahomes did not light up the scoreboard either in this game, but you got to do better than what Dak and the Cowboys did on Sunday. Like, you got to, first of all, score a touchdown. Can we set that as like the minimum bar? I don't remember a ton of games where Peyton Manning and Tom Brady went without a touchdown. Dallas just, they struggled. Two picks for Dak. His QBR was 10 out of 100. That's obviously terrible. And you got to, if you're going to be that elite guy, you got to bring it and you got to be that guy every single week. And I know the Chiefs defense has looked better recently, but I'm sorry. The players are not that different. You got to be able to score on them. They've been hideously bad for most of this season. So I still like Dak. I still think he's really, really good. But last week, he played bad enough to earn the second LVP from me.
Obviously, I'm going to say I think that's fair. And I forgot, I actually did have Dak as LVP in week 9 or whatever against the Broncos when he was really bad. Really bad in this game as well. And look, RJ even said it on Monday Football Monday. He said that like there were a lot of bad passes in there, just inaccurate throws. And, you know, we can talk about how no Tyron Smith, CeeDee Lamb got hurt in this game. Obviously, didn't have Amari Cooper. But like, if you're the MVP of the league, like a lot of people are saying, or some people are saying Dak is, then you can't go into Kansas City and not score a touchdown. Like, you're not this should disqualify him from winning the MVP. Like, you have to win. Like, I mean, you have to at least put up a touchdown in Kansas City. Like, because other, like, what is his value to this offense if he can't at least do that? And again, I agree with you. Like, I know the Chiefs defense is playing better recently, but they're not the 85 Bears out there all of a sudden. Like, you should be able, there's too much going on for that Cowboys offense, even with some absences and everything, that they have to be more competitive in that game where they were. They never felt like they were in it, like at a certain point. Like, you know, I missed some of the first half because I was, you know, coming home from the Eagles game, but like I was watching the game in the second half and I was like never really threatened. I was like, the Cowboys aren't going to win this game. Like, they're just not. Like, they're not in this. So I thought that was pretty discouraging for them. And then just, you know, two of their last three games, not very good. And all of a sudden, the Eagles are not necessarily, I don't think the Cowboys are going to lose control of the East because they still have a bunch of winnable games coming up. And I think they're probably going to bounce back as soon as this week against the Raiders. But like Pete and RJ were talking about, but if the Raiders do win on Thanksgiving, then all of a sudden the Eagles winning the NFC East is like within the realm of possibility. I think from like a Football Outsiders playoff odds perspective, the Eagles only had like a 3% chance or so of winning the NFC East before beating the Saints, and the Cowboys lost. And now it's up to 11. And then if the Raiders lose, you know, or sorry, if the Raiders beat the Cowboys and the Eagles win against the Giants, which is very feasible this week, then, you know, that's going to go up even further. And I think it starts to become like kind of a question here, or at least even if the Eagles don't take it over, they're going to make the Cowboys sweat a little bit, you know, and take it down to week 18, not be in a spot where the Cowboys can kind of just like rest their starters going into the playoffs. And I think these losses have obviously kind of probably cost the Cowboys a chance at getting that number one seed, which has a lot of value. So, and we'll see about that because the Cowboys play the Cardinals in week 17. That's going to be a really big game for them. Mm-hmm. And I think Dallas will ultimately, again, win the East and kind of be fine here. But these losses are kind of concerning.
Mike McCarthy got a lot of credit after the Broncos game, right? He put the
coach
monkey
of the year,
butt
RJ said,
stuff and motivating the team. And it was so great. And he did such a good job. And then they come out and they're maybe their biggest game of the year to this point, and they're flat and terrible and awful. Where are the Mike McCarthy stands now? That's all I want. Like, where are you guys? What he couldn't get the team up this week? He doesn't call the offense. He doesn't call the defense. What the hell else was he working on all week? And they got their ass kicked. So again, I'm not here for the Mike McCarthy love. I've never bought into him as a great head coach. I don't think he is. They got crushed last week in a totally deflating loss. And we'll see. Let's see Dallas now respond to a little bit of adversity, because they've been kind of in cruise control like you talked about. And all of a sudden, things could tighten up in the division. And the number one seed is in jeopardy. So let's see. You know, maybe Mike McCarthy can change my mind a little bit. I don't think he can. But if he does, you know, if they pull it off, then maybe he will a little bit. But yeah, sorry, Dak. Sorry, Cowboys. Sorry, RJ. You get my LVP. All right, BLG, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. But like we said, I'll be seeing a lot more of you later this week. Thursday, Thanksgiving preview extravaganza with RJ Bell. So we'll have that to look forward to. If you haven't done it yet, everybody, please rate, review, follow, subscribe, whatever word you want to use, to the SB Nation NFL show. It really, really does help us. It makes a big difference for the show.
Just want to say thankful stats for you, a great co-host, and the SB Nation NFL show listeners and everyone, picking kind of off what Pete and RJ said. Thankful for my family and friends, some of who listen to this podcast. So shout out to all of you. I hope everyone has a happy and safe holiday. And also thankful stats for DraftKings Sportsbook, which you can use promo code SBNNFL for a special offer. So really thankful.
It is still amazing to me that I wake up and get to do this for a living. People are actually going to work doing super important, super difficult things. And we get to talk about Dak Prescott and football every day. And I will never, ever, ever stop being thankful for that. It is an honor for me to get to be a part of everybody out there's lives and time and your day. And we appreciate it. And we are thankful and grateful. If we don't talk to you before Thanksgiving, everybody have a good holiday. And if not, hopefully you'll join us Thursday morning for the preview extravaganza.